time for Vanessa and Gallant.
That sounds good. I'll have that.
Featuring Vanessa Richardson.
This is not a common opinion. This is not a popular opinion.
And Paul Gallant.
I think for the average person that sees me, they don't know that I'm a cat dad.
On ESPN 97.5 and 92.5 from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, and happy Tuesday to you all. I'm Vanessa Richardson. Paul Gallant is beside me as always. We got Sean Mapes behind the glass. You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. We want to hear from you throughout the show. We are 713-780-ESPN. Of course, you can tweet us or Twitch us. I think I covered everything there.
You got it. Nailed it all.
Astros yesterday, another delay in Boston.
Yeah, what's up with that?
What's up with your hometown?
You poors. You can't even afford a roof. Ooh, look at me. I'm Fenway Park. I'm historic with my tiny chairs that me and my size 31 waist can't even fit in. They give me splinters the whole way.
Are the chairs that small?
Oh, they're tiny.
Really?
They're built for wee little early 20th century folk.
Oh.
I'm not a big fan of Fenway Park. I think it's a dump. It's fun to visit once. The next time you go, you're like, oh, this is terrible. Yeah. And I'm paying at full prices for a stadium that is legitimately falling apart. But yeah, I mean, look, this is what happens when you play in the Northeast early on in the year. It was a torrential downpour, kind of like what we get from time to time here in H-Town. And you had a long delay, and afterwards, yep, ninth inning did not go so well. Xander Bogaerts gets the two-run home run. It's a three-run lead. And ultimately, yeah, that's two of three that the Astros have dropped.
If you turned on the TV when I did, you just saw Jake Odorizzi being pulled off on a stretcher. I was very, very, very concerned.
I was too. I went to ESPN to check on the headlines because I was going back and forth between moving things into my new place and watching the game. It was great. This morning, I got up. Everything was finally all set. I sit down at my computer, and the power went out. So things are great. But anyway, I saw that headline on ESPN, Jake Odorizzi taken off field on stretcher. And I was like, oh, my God, what happened? Because I got the notification on ESPN. Did he have a heart attack? Did something bad happen? And then after the game, you're hearing from him, and you're like, oh, maybe it's not so bad. This is what it sounded like. We have the call. This is from AT&T Sportsnet Southwest.
A little cue shot towards Yuli. Jake fell down trying to cover first. He is on the ground and in pain. Yuli takes the ball to the bag himself. And Jake Odorizzi has not moved since falling to the ground, trying to come off the mound and cover first base.
I mean, Todd did a good job of calling that very factual, right? But it is concerning.
Yeah, it is. But I thought he tore his ACL or that, I don't know, maybe something bad happened.
Yeah, we always make clear like we're not doctors on the show. Right. But it looked really, really bad. It was called, and I quote, lower leg discomfort. That was the exact wording from the team. So rest in peace. He's not dead. He
rest
just
in
was
peace.
Stretchered. He was
good
just
God.
Stretched. Do they call it stretchered off the field?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean, it was aggressive, but obviously hoping for a quick recovery there.
I'm not going to lie. I would rather die than be taken off the field in a stretcher. That's... I would hope I'm dead. If I'm taken off the field in the stretcher, I want to be actually dead, especially if the injury isn't serious. If it's something like, okay, I tore an ACL, I want to do what Richard Sherman did with the Seattle Seahawks when he tore his Achilles, where he just hopped off the field, you know? I want to look like a badass coming off of it, because what happens if you didn't suffer a serious injury?
Blaze of glory.
It's like a slight, it was a hamstring strain. And after the game, you heard from the Astros, and they're like, well, it's not that serious. And I don't know. If I'm Jake Odorizzi, I want to do over on that.
That happened with a couple of Texans guys last year.
It did?
Kamu Grugier-Hill was one of them.
Okay.
There was another player, and I don't remember who it was, where Jack prayed with them. It was a very intense situation.
Oh, God.
There ended up really not being a lot of injury there.
Well, that's because Easterby prayed it away.
Very true.
Come on. Have
miracles
some faith.
Happen. Miracles happen. all right. So the Astros taking on the Red Sox again tonight. This injury with Jake Odorizzi, we expect to hear more from the team on that today.
It is a little concerning just from the perspective of, hey, look at what your starting rotation has been for you thus far this year. Odorizzi's pitched pretty well. He had a pretty good night last night, too. And now you look at it, and without Lance McCullers and without Jake Odorizzi, you have a little less flexibility. But the good thing is that the Astros have had a pretty good amount of starting pitching depth. They are now, though, in the midst of this stretch where they barely have any off days over the course of the next month. So we'll see if this actually catches up to them.
this isn't the ideal way to start off a series in Boston, and hopefully they can actually play a game that goes straight through tonight.
Odorizzi is not very expressive. His face is not very, like, he doesn't show a lot of emotion.
Poker face.
So so it's kind of hard to gauge whether or not it looks serious or not. Julian Morales tweeting, Dusty Baker said, Odorizzi is on crutches and still needs to go on further evaluation.
Okay,
we'll know more tomorrow. So we're going to find out more today.
It might be potentially serious then. It's weird the wide range of prognoses that we have heard about it.
Dr. Paul.
Because it could be...
Leave it to your sister.
See, my sister's the actual doctor.
I know.
I just play a doctor on the radio. You know, from what I saw, have you ever seen some of those accounts that they have, like Pro Football Doc and others that like legitimately watch games and from their computers, and they're usually disgraced doctors who have done something horrible.
Like really bad.
Yeah, sexually harass a patient or like accidentally kill one or something like that. And here they are online where they're like trying to give out like prognoses from Twitter. We should do the same thing.
Prognoses.
I don't know what the plural is of that. Should I put like an apostrophe over the S?
Professor Mapes.
You get what I'm trying to
Professor
say
Professor Mapes is prognoses.
Prognoses.
A word.
It looks like it's prognosis.
Okay, we don't even know.
Prognosis?
Prognostications.
Prognoses?
Hell.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't either. We're lost.
Does Jake Odorizzi's injury, whatever the prognosis may be, make Lance McCullers Jr.'s return that much more
important?
He's
got to get back out there? Vanessa, if he doesn't get back out there tomorrow, the Astros season is over. You just don't get it. You don't get it.
Cold Pete's over here.
I've got to say, if Lance McCullers isn't back out there, you got to question his desire to win. You got to question his desire to be a part of the team. Does he care? Does he care enough? I love those shows. They're so great.
Yeah, they're hard to
watch. Yesterday.
They're hard to watch. Oh, we'll get to Patrick Beverly. Trust me.
It was amazing.
Jeremy Pena, no real update on that. He's been out since Thursday with a sore right knee. And Chandler Rome said Pena is, quote, available off the bench. Which is a good sign.
Yeah. I think what we've noticed from the Astros, at least thus far this year, is that they have been very cautious. And look, this is what happens. When you have been through the ringer as many times as this team has, you are generally just going to play things as cautiously as possible because you think that you're going to be there at the very end. We'll see with Pena. I mean, you definitely don't want to hear about something like that a month into the year, especially when he's been playing well and you wonder what he's going to be like when he comes back. Is this where he's going to face his first true slump that he's going to have to adjust from? But we'll see, of course. Injury bug catching up a little bit. But you know what? You expect this over the course of a long season. The good thing is the Astros do have a ton of depth.
Every single stadium, every single venue where a sporting event happens should have a roof.
You think so?
Yes.
See, this, spoken like a true Colts fan.
You're just unacceptable.
Soft. You can't handle the elements.
Love the roof.
Ooh, we can't handle it when it's less than 72 degrees. I'm Peyton Manning. All of my records are just as valid as anybody else's.
I played
the dome my whole
they
career.
Are.
Just like
Absolutely
Drew Brees.
They are.
I hate the idea of domes for everything. Now, I will say for baseball, there are certain places where it makes sense. Here in Houston, where it is, first off, 100 degrees every single day. And when you do get torrential downpour, it is awful.
You don't think that publicly funded stadiums should make sure that they have roofs so that the games can go off on time and that they're not inconvenienced by weather?
Well, I mean, you could have a roof and then the roof never opens if it's publicly funded too. See? You know, NRG Stadium.
Sean's against roofs. Sean Mapes.
I'm 100% pro roof.
Oh.
I think everything should have a roof.
Yes.
Oh, you guys are soft.
Yes.
You guys
it's
are soft.
It's not soft. It's that you're
classic
using tax
Southerners.
Dollars.
This is just a...
Southerners?
This is a Southerner's take. Yep.
I'm not a Southerner. No, I'm
Indiana.
From Terre Haute, Indiana.
That's South. That's South enough to me.
South of Boston, dude.
Dude, you don't understand. You go out to Boston, you go play at Gillette Stadium or something like that, and you freeze out there like those Colts and their sissy little wide receivers. Oh, look at me. I'm going to drop to the ground after I catch a pass. I'm sorry. I like the idea of playing in the elements. And obviously, baseball is one of those sports where you don't, but you should, right? And something I've always felt like is a sleeping giant is a possible home field advantage for the Houston Texans. Get rid of the roof. Have people come down here and just die in the heat. Seriously, that's an advantage. You know, Miami Dolphins, they play outdoors. Who wants to play in Miami in September? You may as well use the environment that you have as an advantage, much like who wants to go up into the Northeast in the dead of winter to go play a football game.
I like the idea of elements, and I hate all of this. This is the new analytics model. We don't want to play inside. You guys are soft.
No, it's not analytics.
Soft. Absolutely
soft. It's common sense. Last night, the Astros game was delayed because of rain in Boston.
Just a southerner.
Makes no sense.
Unbelievable. Yeah, Indiana.
Terre Haute, Indiana. The South Midwest. So south. Meanwhile, Mark Feinsand reporting, of MLB.com, reporting that the Astros recently spoke with Kyle Tucker's camp about a contract extension, but the sides were unable to come to a deal and are no longer engaged, sources tell him and Brian McTaggart. Tucker, of course, becomes arbitration eligible for the first time at the end of the season. So, not a huge deal, but worth noting.
It will be something to keep an eye on, especially if Tucker has a monster season, again, much like he did last year. Not quite there yet. Jordan's the one having the monster year to this point.
And they are on the same timetable.
True. I think comparing this to previous deals where the Astros were able to get Jose Altuve a deal ahead of where you traditionally get it, and they were able to do the same thing with Alex Bregman. But I think players, if you're being smart and you learn from seeing what's happening around you, if you're Kyle Tucker, I think you wait and see what you can get. Like, you just had your first great season. Do you really want to sign the first deal the Astros give you? Because they want to lock you into one of those deals that you're probably going to come to regret eventually. That's generally how it works. And it's one of those weird things with baseball because, of course, you have arbitration for the next couple of years. And I don't like that it's set up that way. But if I'm Kyle Tucker, I'm probably betting on myself as opposed to signing the first deal that the Astros give me. I don't know what the Astros can do as a sweetener to potentially get him to sign one of those, because if you want to keep this whole core together, obviously you want to start having those conversations right now. But if you're Kyle Tucker, that's the smart move, is to probably walk away from anything at this point in time.
What the Astros will do. I mean, they have an MO by now. Money that they'll spend, money that they won't spend, extensions that they'll get. You kind of know what you're getting, I feel like.
They operate on a budget.
Right.
Is it the cheapest budget in the world? No, they're not the A's or the Rays or anything like that. But, I mean, based off of what we have seen from them over the last couple of years, there is definitely a limit to the kind of deal that they're going to give. They're not going to give Carlos Correa that kind of deal that he wanted. They're not going to give it to George Springer. They're not going to give it to Gerrit Cole. There is a limit that they go over. And Kyle Tucker is potentially one of those players down the road.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, there was an analyst yesterday on ESPN speaking to former Houston player, analyst on ESPN, with some really interesting comments on Chris Paul. We're going to get to Patrick Beverly. That is up next.
This is Heisman Trophy winner Troy Smith, and you're listening to ESPN 97.5. Go Bucks.
Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It's a biggie. Nice. Sean Mapes behind the glass. Doing us right.
Wake up. Okay. I've never heard this song. I like it.
Spoken like a true Bostonian.
I'm just trying to embrace the lyrics. I thought the first thing that he said was playoffs. And I was like, wow, is this the new ESPN playoff song? Sort of like what they had back in the day. Remember, they would show this song. I think it was either ESPN or TNT. They would always have one song that they would just overkill for the entirety of the playoffs. Like, one year it was Lincoln.
Pitbull and Kesha.
Yeah. Pitbull just takes over a Kesha song. Like, the, it's going down, I'm yelling timber. And then in the background, Pitbull's just going, playoff. Playoff. Got it. Bigger than I've become, the harder they fall. Playoff.
Yeah, no, he repurposed his verse in the real song and just put in, like, basketball words in the middle of it and then gave it to ESPN.
Backcourt violation. Playoff.
Carrie Underwood does it right with Sunday Night Football on NBC.
The ripoff of the Joan Jett song?
Yeah, it's just a little bit of a ripoff. Some of the lyrics are replaced.
Bring back Faith Hill, sorry.
Yeah.
Faith Hill was the best. And
Would you complain about either one of them, though?
I just liked Faith Hill better. I think
I thought
she's
you
more
liked
talented.
Blondes.
Well, I don't know. I don't see hair color, actually. First off. Second, because, then there's another year where it was Linkin Park, and they were
that
playing...
That was not good.
Burn it to the ground. That was playing before every single NBA playoff game. So I was wondering if that Biggie song was...
No, it was called Play a Hater.
Play a Hater.
Oh.
Do you remember in the...
brings us to our theme of this segment.
The Michael Jordan... Thank you. The Michael Jordan documentary last two seasons ago where
The Last
they,
Dance?
Yeah, they did. I don't want to be a playin' no more. I'm not a play. I just crush a lot.
Yeah. We're not white. Playoffs.
All right. We are rolling along on a Tuesday. And definitely a player hater yesterday on ESPN. Patrick Beverley, somebody Houston sports fans know well.
I think he just got a full-time job at ESPN because he's on ESPN
to be
again
clear,
today.
To be clear, he's been on all of this morning.
They're just like, we're never going to let this guy leave. We're going to have him on the air on retainer as long as we possibly can.
Do you think he pecked that sweater or he like had JJ to get it Redick, after the show yesterday?
JJ basically was like, that's a really nice outfit this morning. And I don't know if he was asking him that, but I think it was in an indirect way. Like, JJ's supposed to be like one of the main analysts, and Pat Bev comes in, is on. But to be clear, I watched Get Up this morning, so this is the third show.
I don't want Beverly to come in looking like some sort of suit though, and that's what this makes him look like. I want him to come in with a silk fedora hat, with a long purple trench coat that's just absolutely fabulous. I want him to enter like he's Silky Johnson from the Play a Haters Ball.
Well, well, well. The most diabolical haters this side of the Mississippi.
This is, look, okay. You always have to take sports on TV with a grain of salt. There's a lot of theatrics that go on. I think anyone who listens to me realizes that I put a little bit of theatrics into everything I do, too. Yes.
Wait, Sean, did you know that Paul puts theatrics into his delivery?
I like to be dramatic. It's fun. Anyway, I think, though, that people do realize when I'm being real. Like, I have a serious voice, and I have a, whoa, he's being wacky voice. Beverly is coming in like a straight hater. And the violence that he inflicted upon Chris Paul yesterday is one of the most hilarious things I've ever seen.
It's one of those things, too, to where with Patrick Beverly, it's not just the fact that he decided to be critical about Chris Paul, because that's one thing. But it's the fact that he's still in the league.
Yeah.
And it's the fact that he said things equating him to a construction, what would you call this, construction accessory? Here's Pat Beverly on Chris Paul.
True. He's not lying about
man,
that.
CP can't guard nobody, man. Everybody in the NBA
he
know
can't
that.
Guard,
everybody
can't
know
guard
that.
Anybody.
What we call them? Cone. You know what you do with cones? Like when in the summertime, you got a cone. You make a move. What does the cone do?
Stay still.
Exactly. Yeah. He's a cone. Stop playing, man. Everybody that knows that. Everyone knows that.
He is a cone at this point in time. I don't know that I would go that far, but whatever. There's just something about Patrick Beverley talking about Chris Paul that is intoxicating. Because, Vanessa, the point that you just brought up, there's a lot of guys in the NBA who don't talk about other guys who are a part of the team. Well, anyway, you have in this situation with Patrick Beverley and Chris Paul, a guy who is clearly taking it personally and attacking Chris Paul personally. Like, this is personal. Here is Patrick Beverley continuing, where he basically says, Chris Paul has been cheating the league, and he should have fouled out before he even got to the point where he was a traffic cone.
Ain't nobody worried about Chris Paul when he played Phoenix Suns. Nobody in the NBA.
Well, what did I just say, though?
And I'm just letting you know how NBA players feel and think.
I believe you, but what I'm saying
he's finessed the game to a point where he gets all the petty calls, all the swipe throughs at the end. I mean, this guy is out, man. We go be honest. We want to be really honest.
Yes.
He should have fouled out. The last game, too. You see the replay against Brunson. Hit him on the shoulder. Hit him in the mouth. Ref don't call anything. If that's me, oh, review it. Oh, flagrant one. If that's him, they don't call it. So let's not get it twisted, man. He should have fouled out. He can't guard.
It's
he
so petty.
He can't guard.
And that's where he got into he's a traffic cone. Like, that was just like a minute and a half of Patrick Beverley and his like hours on ESPN yesterday.
And hours is the key because he
hateful
he,
energy.
He went on the morning show and then they had him in the beginning, the A block, the lead of SportsCenter, and now he's doing it all.
I love it.
Today. Do you guys have a problem, and this is our question for you, and we would love for you to call us, give us your input, let us know on the text line, 713-780-ESPN. Did Patrick Beverley go too far? Because the point that a lot of people make, like I've heard Chris Long, Troy Aikman, and NBA players talk about how when you're in the league, it's hard to be critical of other guys in the league because you know them, you've played with them, you're playing against them currently. Once you're a couple of years removed, it's not as hard. So did Patrick Beverley go too far for somebody that is still in the NBA?
If you're soft, yeah. I mean, if you can't handle that, then I don't know what to tell you. You don't have to like every single player you play with in a league. That would be crazy if you were actually able to do that. He has opinions. He might be wrong with some of them, but he's speaking them passionately. If you have an issue, clap back at him. I hate all of this. Oh, well, you know, he's a really good player. All of this stuff that we constantly hear. And I don't know what it is. Is it people that are trying to step away from potentially stepping on the toes and motivating someone? Like, I used to believe this growing up, that if you talked trash about the other team, then the other team would somehow be motivated to beat you. I don't believe that anymore.
Really?
I don't know. I mean, there are certain teams where you should probably watch it with, you know, and I will say, like, with the Golden State Warriors and what Memphis did, like, okay, like, you better back it up. That's all I'm trying to say. But I have no problem with someone like Jalen Ramsey going in an article with, what was it, GQ? And calling guys like Josh Allen and other quarterbacks trash. Like, he just dumped on everybody. That is honest. That is how people actually feel. Now, we can criticize them for said opinions. We can say that those opinions are uninformed or whatever. But at least they're being honest about it, as opposed to this, like, mamby-pamby political stuff that we consistently see. And you know what? Like, there are some points that Beverley has been making, and it's 100% personal and petty. And I think, like, Matt Barnes took issue with it or something like that.
Barnes said, and I have the quote right here.
It's funny, because it's Matt Barnes.
Because I wanted to read this, so if I can, just real quick. There's a thin line between being critical and disrespecting, is what Matt Barnes said. And I feel like what Pat Beverley did today to Chris Paul was disrespectful and out of line. Pat Beverley's talking like he's that guy. You're not that guy, plain and simple. Chris Paul was playing terrible, and his numbers are still better than your career numbers have ever been.
But does that mean that Chris Paul wasn't terrible in the last games of that series? Because he was. He was minus 39 in game 7 as a plus minus. That's embarrassing. It's embarrassing.
This is also, I think, Matt Barnes saying, Matt Barnes makes no bones about wanting to be one of the main analysts on ESPN.
But Barnes is also one of these guys, Vanessa, that is on that All Smoke podcast. Who has been critical of other guys in the past, and it's weird that, like, he's mad, like, oh, you got to show Chris Paul respect. No, this is Matt Barnes sticking up for a guy that he, and I believe that they used to play together, right? They played with each other with the Clippers, Sean? Is that correct?
Yeah, I think so. Let me double check. Okay. But yeah, I think it's partly that, like, he's just defending his guy. Chris Paul is his guy. He's not
I think it's that,
guy.
And I think it's the media wars where Matt, I actually do legitimately think Matt Barnes wants to be one of the top analysts, you know, for NBA on ESPN, and he sees Pat Beverley coming in and being the lead block on every show. I think there's a little bit of that pettiness here, but we would love to hear what you guys have to say. Was it petty? Was it too far? Should current players be able to criticize other current players in this way? They're not all going to be like LeBron James, where all they're doing is like fire emojis, I love Luka on Twitter.
LeBron is just like a nonstop series of Instagram comments designed to create further aggregation for his brand. You know, like those people that will post like, yes, queen, like heart, 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 or like fire. They'll just post it constantly in other big Instagram accounts because that gets their aggregation up so they're seen by more people. It's all a ruse. It's all a scam.
And you know every single bit of it because you've researched it so that you can go viral?
Yes.
Coming up.
Can you stop rubbing it in? Thank you.
Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant.
I still don't do it.
The investigation into Deshaun Watson seems like it's about to wrap up. That is per a very reliable source from ESPN and NFL Network. We'll get to it next.
Years of research and innovation.
Innovation Map is the new voice of innovation in Houston.
Pretty cool, huh, Morty?
Covering startups, tech, energy, health, social impact, and more. Visit innovationmap.com today.
Do it now! Do it! Do it! Do it now!
You're listening to Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Vanessa Richardson and Paul Gallant.
All right, so we've wondered when the NFL investigation will wrap up on Deshaun Watson. We didn't hear a lot for a long time. Tony Busby said that the NFL had yet to approach Deshaun Watson. Rusty Hardin had said that as well. It appears that this is the week that they are getting the info that they need. They interviewed Deshaun Watson yesterday. That's according to Josina Anderson and Ian Rappaport. And it's supposed to wrap up today. As Ian Rappaport put on NFL Network, they usually interview the subject of investigations last. So that means it's wrapping up. Deshaun Watson, of course, set to take the team to the Bahamas, the offense to the Bahamas later this week. But what do you think happens? What are we predicting? What punishment do you think could be in place?
Well, I do wonder, just because of the way that the Browns have two primetime games as currently scheduled, and zero of them being in the second half of the season, I wonder if a full season is in play. And I'll go back to just looking at what the major leagues did with Trevor Bauer, where they suspended him for 2 years, and he's already been sort of indefinitely suspended along the way for, from what I understand, to be extremely rough sex with multiple women. I don't know if it went further than that. I know that there's like restraining orders and things of that nature. I know Bauer's fighting to clear his name. I don't know the true facts of the situation. I just know why baseball decided to suspend him. Would you equate what Deshaun Watson's doing to that? If you're the NFL and you see the contract that the Browns gave to Watson, where they have structured it in a way where he won't get fined for a whole lot of money in the first season, say he is to be suspended for a full season, half the season. If you're the NFL, you see that, it's like the Browns are kind of flicking you off and saying, well, we're going to let Deshaun Watson essentially get everything that he wants. So I think there's a bunch of circumstances here that would lead the NFL to potentially act a little bit more aggressively than they have in years past. Basically what baseball's done, and I just think that the way that the Browns have acted as if nothing is wrong.
I think that when the NFL suspended Calvin Ridley for gambling, it was a full season, right? With from the guy from the Falcons?
Yeah, and that was for gambling.
And then that's for gambling. I think.
But they want that to stop, like, in its tracks.
And I understand.
Immediately.
But it's like, don't you want sexual misconduct to stop at its tracks immediately?
There's Jerry Jones is still an owner. Robert Kraft is still an owner.
There's no proof that Deshaun Watson did any of this unless there's something that we're missing. I've read through the documents. Most of us have seen the subpoenas. Most of us have, you know, it's all public knowledge for the most part and public record. But if you're the NFL and you're thinking, okay, we just suspended Calvin Ridley for a full season for gambling, don't you think that they may feel, and great point, Trevor Bauer, 2 seasons for MLB. Don't you think that they may feel like, to me, it has to be half a season or more. I'm not saying it should be that. I'm just saying, so don't come. I'm saying that's my prediction because of, you know, the context clues that you get from other suspension cases.
We need, honestly, a just wheel of fortune-esque wheel of punishment for the NFL because it's always completely random. I mean, remember that kicker for the New York Giants who, in the wake of, I think the NFL had already enacted its domestic violence policy, and they gave him, I think, like 1 game at first, and then everyone got pissed, and then they changed it to 4, and then the guy basically ended up being just out of the league altogether, if I'm not mistaken. It's one of those things where they are so inconsistent, you really can't predict anything. I will not lie, though, from a strictly football perspective, I would love to see Watson suspended for an entire year. That would be great for the Texans. I want the Browns to suck. I want that first-round draft pick to be great, and I don't care that who knows about it. You know, I'm not hiding my hand. That's good for the Texans.
If you're a fan of an AFC team, isn't that automatic?
In terms of rooting for the
right.
Him to get suspended the whole year, yes, obviously, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if
also screw the Browns, right? Like you know, oh, look at us, we're the Cleveland Browns. Everyone feels bad for us, and then you do this and you trade for Deshaun Watson. You know, it's just like distasteful the way that they did it. Like, yeah, we'll sell our soul. We're that down bad. We will sell our soul to get a quarterback. Okay, great. Then deal with the repercussions in the short term
right.
Then. This probably will pay off for them long term. But yeah, I want them to get smacked around by the redheaded hammer.
If Deshaun Watson gets suspended, and let's say it's for half a season or more, do you think that Cleveland holds on to Baker Mayfield and considers starting him at QB1?
No, you can't. They got to get rid of him
now. You
think
it's Jacoby Brissett?
This is one of those situations where it's just done. It's done there, right? I mean, isn't it sort of the same thing that we saw this past year with Philadelphia and Ben Simmons?
Right.
There is a certain point where that guy is just done here. And it's not that he's done with the fan base necessarily. I'm sure there are some people that actually support Baker Mayfield in Cleveland, given that he did get them to the playoffs and they beat the hell out of the Steelers in one of those playoff games. But no one in that locker room seems to like him. What is the point? Just cut him. Oh, we're going to get something in return for him. You're not getting anything in return for him. Get rid of the dead weight.
So you don't think that Baker Mayfield is going to be invited on the trip to the Bahamas?
That would be funny. He should go. Just like to surprise everybody. Hey, everybody, it's me, Baker. And they could turn it into a what's the commercials that he does now? Oh, shoot. What commercials doesn't he do at this point in time?
The progressive ones.
Progressive,
where he acts like he lives at the stadium. Yeah. Awkward.
Yeah.
I think the thing with the Deshaun Watson situation in general is that it is unprecedented. And the word unprecedented kind of gives me PTSD after COVID because I heard it so many times.
Uncertain times.
But there's, in these, buy a Toyota. There's never
we
been.
We stand with you. But buy, buy some stuff.
There's never been 22 anything. And nobody's ever been accused of 22 anything in the NFL. So is it the sheer volume that may make them do half a season or a full season? What evidence do they have? And would it even go to trial? I don't know. It'll be interesting to see. But my prediction would be half a season at the very least, regardless of how you feel about what evidence is there or isn't there. I think the league feels pressure from when they've not handled things as well in the past.
Yeah. And it's funny. They still can't figure out the right way to do it. If you want to silence your most vocal critics, though, which it seems like that's all anyone cares about these days, then you suspend him for a long time. He'll appeal it. The players will get mad, but what power do the players really have? And do you really want to be like outspoken as a player rep for one of these teams standing up for Deshaun Watson? I mean, I do think it all adds up to it's best for the NFL to give him a long suspension because last year did not count. He was benched.
That's a good point.
It didn't count.
Because I think sometimes in people's minds, they subconsciously think that he has already served a suspension because he was out for a year, but he didn't. That was him and the Texans deciding that he would not play. So it'll definitely be interesting to see that again, according to Josina Anderson and Ian Rappaport, is supposed to wrap up today. The NFL investigation and Lisa Friel speaking with Deshaun Watson. I saw an interesting question on Twitter, gentlemen, that I wanted you guys' opinion on.
Okay.
It was posed by a producer out of, it looks like, New York. And he asked, is it weird to attend sporting events by yourself? And there were a lot of takes on both sides of this. People that said that a sporting event is just something you go to with friends. You don't go by yourself. But a lot of people saying, yeah, I'll do anything by myself. What say you?
Well, I go to movies by myself a lot. And that's a situation, though, where you're not talking to anybody over the course of the entire game. Or excuse me, over the entire movie. At least ideally. Unless it's
we've all gone to the movies with somebody that wants to talk the whole time and it's horrific.
It's bad. Every now and then it's funny to make like a little, like to whisper to somebody, hey, like a funny little quip or something like that as the movie is going on. But for the most part, you watch a movie in silence. That's why I've always felt like movies for a date, you better be a couple of dates in. It's a terrible idea. For a first date, it's awful.
Yeah.
I mean, what are you thinking? You want to talk to the person. You want FaceTime. That's like a date three on kind of move. But it's a good question. I don't like going to a sporting event by myself. It's not to say I would never do it, but I mean, if you're going to a sporting event by yourself, what are you going to do in the downtime? What are you going to do in the commercial break? You know, if you're not experiencing it with somebody else, you're experiencing with other fans, but are you going to make friends with everybody sitting around you?
Like, we're less friendly. Would. Asking awkward questions.
Hey, I mean, look, if you find a way to make friends with other people, great. I just think for the most part these days that people are a little bit more closed off from others, and it takes there's a welcome breaking in period to get there. And you also might be like me, where so when I went to that Texans Titans game, so my friend Steph Stradley, who you guys might know from
nice.
The Chronicle, she gave me one of her tickets to that Texans-Titans game. So I went there, and I was basically by myself, but I knew other people there, and I went to go sit with them afterwards. And thank God I did, because you don't know who's going to be around you. You might end up in a spot where you're surrounded by idiot Houston Titan fans, you know? And you're
Houston
like,
Titans.
What do I want to do? Like, what? Like, this person's clearly from Houston. Why am I sitting here? Why have I subjected myself to this? I like to go with somebody else. What say you?
I don't think that I would go to a sporting event by myself, but I love going to a bar. And just sitting by myself.
You like going to a bar by yourself. Yeah, wow.
To eat at a bar, like a bar top.
Okay.
And like watch a game by myself.
By by yourself.
Love it. Yeah, I just think it's really relaxing.
I can't.
Got some like divorced dad music, like Don Henley playing in the background.
Speaking of divorced dads, aren't the divorced dads going to come and approach you when you're by yourself?
I was going to say, this is such a shocking take from a woman.
Yeah.
This is the most shocking thing.
You're just like letting it be easy for people to approach you.
I just love going to bars alone.
I do. I like eating at bar tops alone.
Okay.
I think it's really relaxing. Watching a game by myself, whatever. I don't have to cook. What about you, Sean? Sporting event by yourself?
I've never gone to a sporting event by myself. I also, it would have to depend on the sporting event. Because in a weird way, I think baseball would be the most, would be the hardest one. Because there's, like Paul said, so much downtime. Where you're really just kind of sit, unless maybe you just bring headphones and listen to either the radio or a podcast or something. I feel like you can get a lot of good podcast listening in on a baseball game.
Bring a book.
But then football, I think you could still salvage a good time with football. Just get drunk and
rowdy. That's a good point. Yeah. Todd, the show says you actually see this quite often at restaurant bars. I know there are a lot of people that like going to bars. Sitting at the bar top, eating alone.
I don't mind going to a bar top by myself, but I'm in and out,
Yeah.
When I was in Seattle, though, and I didn't know anybody, I mean, that was how I tried to make friends. And I was like, okay, people in Seattle just don't like to talk to other people.
Not friendly.
No, there was a bar next door to the apartment that I lived on Capitol Hill that I moved out of after my whole chill dog escapade where, I had people sending me actual hate mail to my address. They found my address. Yeah, it was. But I got out of my lease, so that was nice. But I remember I would go to this one place and I felt like I was a bar regular, but I also became friends with the people that were working at the bar and stuff. So, I mean, if you go to the same place over and over again and you actually become friendly with the bar service staff, then great. But it's a little different with a sporting event. You're generally not going to be in the same seats all the time. Hanging out with the same people, if you're a season ticket holder, that's great. You go by yourself because you're going to meet other people there that you probably know and you've sat around before.
We want you guys' opinion as always. Coming up on Vanessa and Gallant, ESPN 97.5 and 92.5, we are talking about the Astros, our predictions for today, and a potential pitching problem. That's next.
ESPN 97.5. Broadcasting live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, it's Vanessa and Gallant on ESPN 97.5 and 92.5.
It happens all the time now, and it's, as a broadcaster, one of your worst fears, getting canceled.
Yeah, there.
We've all
survived that.
You did survive being canceled.
Yeah, I just wasn't allowed to talk for 2 days. That was fun.
Chill dog?
Yeah, I wasn't allowed to talk about politics ever again, which is ironic because at a certain point, I did conservative talk radio on the side in Seattle for a little
COVID
bit.
COVID was fun for you, huh?
It was. That was funny. It was basically like, do you have a moderate take? Well, in Seattle, that makes you a fascist. So here you go. But anyway, I have survived being canceled.
You have.
But you're right. When you are growing up online, you don't think that any of the posts that you put up there could ever potentially be used against you.
I mean, I've had a Twitter since I was a junior in high school.
Damn. Okay.
Yeah.
I think Twitter started when I was a junior in college. So I didn't start until then. And I remembered as someone who wanted to be a broadcaster that I should be very smart with what I put out there. So there are the occasional swear words that I've put out online and other things that maybe some would find distasteful or horrific, but there are certain things that you never, ever say, even if they are lyrics to a song. You just don't, because people are never going to understand that. People are going to see it, and they are going to forget the context. They are just going to see the word, and they are going to lose their mind.
As is what's happening with New York Yankees left-hander Nestor Cortez.
Mm-hmm.
He deactivated his Twitter account after screenshots came about of tweets from over a decade ago. Now, he's 27 years old, so
right.
These are from when he was in high school.
17
years
old.
17. Not great. Nothing egregious, but some song lyrics to, I believe, a future song. Ain't Worried About Nothing. Name of the song.
That's a French Montana song.
Thank you, French Montana. Wow.
It's a bad song, too, by the way.
It's not a good song, but it is very much a song that a 17-year-old likes.
Right. Because it's
ain't worry
terrible
about nothing.
And involves
ain't
no
worry
talent
about nothing,
to make
but
it.
A...
Well, you can't even hear what he's saying. He's like, like it's mumble BS. Like there are some music that I remember whenever I heard that song, this is one of those songs that would make my eyes roll into the back of my head and me go on a rant among all my friends. My friends are like, shut up, Paul. We
don't
care.
I don't think I liked French Montana because was he the... don't stop, pop that, pop
yes,
that. God, he was annoying. And I like some rap music, but not good. But regardless, Nelson tweeting the lyrics to that song, and it has blown up in his face. So he did, to his credit, apologize for it. He said, it's not acceptable. I think I could have managed myself and said stuff differently, but I'm here today to say that I'm going to work on it and fix it.
I read those tweets. And to me, it strikes me as someone who is comfortable saying that aloud, but maybe it's because he hung out in high school with some people and he heard that a lot and then he said it a lot and it just, to him, he thought it was acceptable. But look, obviously what he did is dumb. He's a dumb 17-year-old. I'm not going to just destroy him for it. And it's funny that people decide to go back in time and look at things that you have posted online. Why? Because you're having a moment of success. So apparently this took place on Sunday, Vanessa, when he was mowing down the Chicago White Sox. So far be it from me to stand up for a member of the New York Yankees, but this is a stupid, idiotic move by a high schooler. He does seem remorseful about it. I mean, do we need to have this as a lead story on ESPN? Do we need to drag him? Does he need to stop playing sports altogether for being an idiot when he was in high school? It is funny how we judge words so harshly these days as opposed to actions. And it's not
a great... Wow.
Well,
that's great.
Am I wrong?
Sean's nodding his head.
It does feel...
Hey, for all the high school seniors out there, you can use that as a yearbook quote. Yeah,
but, well, actions...
Absolutely.
Actions used to speak louder than words.
Yeah.
It's what you are. It's what you do. You know, because a lot of people say, well, people know who I am. No, people see what you do. You know, you can say anything. Anyone can say anything. I can talk all I want, but it's what I actually do in my life. And it's funny that we just jump down people's throats for things that they have said as if this makes them subhuman or something like that. Where, you know, like someone like Deshaun Watson or Ben Roethlisberger back in the day or Antonio Brown, like just to name some specific athletes, it's what they do. That's why we think they're bad people.
I'm the same age as Nestor Cortez, and I can confirm that 10 years ago, Twitter was basically where you would post song lyrics. Sean, am I wrong? Wait, I mean, it was...
So what's with that? The fascination with that. And I'm probably, I probably did that at one point too on Facebook.
And Facebook and Twitter.
Facebook statuses.
Social media has evolved. Like even looking, you know, some of the young women I know, and if you are listening and you're a guy and you have a daughter and you don't check her Instagram, that's probably good. And I would recommend that you don't, because it's just turned into, like when Instagram started, you didn't really even post a lot of pictures of yourself. It was like you would post like pictures of your coffee, of your view or whatever. And now it's like straight thirst trap, as they say. So social media has definitely evolved. But yeah, I highly, highly recommend when I talk to college students, go through your Twitter, search your name with words that you would not want popping up for employers, any pictures that you would not, make it private, and whatnot.
Just don't post anything. And don't do anything ever. How about that? Those are actions.
That was the smartest thing I did in high school, is that I didn't ever... I started a Twitter account, but I never downloaded the app on my phone. So I just never used it.
There you go.
And so I'll never get Nestor Cortez'd.
You are,
trust me, I would have some stuff on there.
Sean's very... I told them some of mine before the show, and it was nothing terrible, but it was things that I have deleted that I wouldn't want people like reading necessarily on air. Okay, meanwhile, Paul's hometown and his beloved New England Patriots, there's been some conversation throughout the NFL offseason on who's going to call the plays for the Patriots. They have Matt Patricia on staff. They have Joe Judge on staff. And then, of course, Bill Belichick, who's a control freak and does everything anyway. Who do you think they're going to have call plays, and what direction do you see the offense going with Mac Jones?
Well, is it bad if I don't think it matters?
It's your take. And it's your team.
So they are weird. They don't like titles. It's honestly very American. You know, didn't bring over dukes and earls and barons and all those things from feudal Europe
history
over to the United States. We didn't do that. And honestly, I take issue with calling any politician by their title, too. I'm just like, no, you're a representative citizen. Shut up. I'm not calling you mayor. I'm not calling you president. You're a human being.
I'm actually with you on that.
You're a human being.
You're
a representative citizen. And if you are no better than anybody else, even though, of course, money changes that a little bit. But anyway, sorry. Back to this tangent. Off the tangent. It's strange that they are bringing in guys to the offense that don't have traditional backgrounds in offense. And I think that's where people are like, whoa, what's Bill Belichick doing? Because Joe Judge in the past was a special teams coordinator, and Matt Patricia in the past was a defensive coordinator, and now both. Patricia's, I think, working with the offensive line, and on top of that, you have Judge now working with the quarterbacks and stuff. I am not sweating over it. I am not stressing over it. And I honestly don't think it's that big of a deal, because you've seen in the past, like, the Patriots haven't had a defensive coordinator. Oh, Bill Belichick, he's in charge of the defense, it's fine. But when he's in charge of the offense, oh, you're a little bit nervous about that. Like, Bill Belichick's the greatest football mind that has ever lived.
Right.
It's not close. So it is strange. It's unconventional. There's certain teams, it is an issue. You know, I would say here in Houston, you know, with Tim Kelly and Bill O'Brien, and it always felt like Bill O'Brien either had too much on his plate, or he was giving the things that were not fitting on his plate to people who were unqualified for the gig.
Even with Josh McDaniels leaving for the Raiders, you don't think it's that big of a deal?
That
to try
is
and,
a bigger deal than, I think, giving someone a title.
But I think that's
title.
The point, is that he was the offensive coordinator, and now he's Las Vegas Raiders head coach. So who's going to step in for his responsibility?
When you word it like that, yes, that is something to wonder
So
about.
Would you want Joe Judge, or would you want Matt Patricia?
I think Judge.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think Judge. Judge, 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 Judge.
But Judge honestly, was asked this week. He said, look, I'll tell you directly and honestly, nothing has been declared or voiced to me in terms of who calls plays. That's not the main focus right now. When coach wants to go ahead and declare a role like that, he'll tell us. I just think Josh McDaniels, as much as I don't like him, I recognize his skill set. And I think it's going to be a huge void for the Patriots.
The last time I had concerns about the Patriots offense was when Bill O'Brien was offensive coordinator.
That's a great point.
He turned that into a head coaching gig at Penn State somehow. I have questions about what's going to happen, but I think it's more because of, I don't know what the ceiling is for Mac Jones,
right.
And I don't think he's that far away from it.
All right, if you own your home, listen to me. Grab your phone. Our friends at TGS Insurance are going to deliver big savings, and you don't even have to talk to an agent. I know you pay too much for your home insurance. You know you pay. You're probably not shopping around, though, because it's so obnoxious. But it doesn't have to be a hassle anymore. Thanks to TGS, they have a new system. It instantly shops over 3 dozen carriers. You get that full quote in less than 15 seconds. And all you have to do is send a single text. So take your phone right now. Text MONEY, money, to 232323. You send back your address, and you get your full quote with great coverage in 15 seconds. This company is the real deal. The savings are the real deal. Their online rating is nearly perfect. Their average customer from 2021 is saving over $870. So again, I know you don't want to do it. You don't want to shop for home insurance, but TGS makes it the easiest it's ever been, and you're only one text away from big savings. One more time, money to 232323. Get your home insurance quote and save big today.
You gonna answer that?
To call into the HRNP listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help.